Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good Saturday morning to you. It's Hardy here with you on the Sports Hub Golf Club. Another dreary Saturday morning, but it's supposed to clear up, which is good because I'm supposed to be playing my first 18 of the year today. Oh my God, how are you going to do it, Hardy, with the Kentucky Derby happening? Well, it helps that I don't care much about that. And it's not till later anyway, from what I understand. But anyway, hopefully things clear up if you've got a tee time this morning or if you've got one later on today. And we are going to be talking about a few different things here on the show this morning. Number one, we're going to be talking equipment with our friend Steve Conley from Callaway. As always, Callaway has all kinds of goodies to offer up for 2019. I met up with Steve back at the Golf Expo early March. And got a chance to talk about and look at some of the offerings from Callaway for this new season. But we'll go over those again, and I'm sure Steve will have something else new here for us this morning. So that'll be coming up in a little while. Some more Tiger Woods news, mostly with regard to his schedule and how that is going to play out for this year, because a lot of people base their golf viewing habits on what Tiger is doing and how that schedule may have changed due to him winning the Masters. So we'll get into that a little bit later also. But I wanted to start this morning and talk about where I am and why I'm here. Basically, I started this year doing portions of this show, which is now in its seventh year on 98.5 The Sports Hub, The Sports Hub Golf Club, doing large portions of this show from my home. And I don't mean pre-recorded segments, phone interviews, like you may have heard Rick Riley last week. That was obviously, you know, Rick wasn't up at 7 o'clock in the morning, which would have been 4 a.m. out on the West Coast to do the show. No, I pre-recorded that from home. I'm talking about live, right now, at this moment. I'm in my home studio in Canton. And the reason why I am here is because of a man by the name of James Lamar. James Lamar was a friend of mine who passed away on Thursday. Jimmy, as I called him, was a builder and ended up being a neighbor and, more importantly, a friend. And Jimmy was the type of guy who, when I met him back in February of 2018, and it may have even been a month or two before that. It's neither here nor there, but I just want to explain to you the type of guy that Jimmy was. He was the type of guy that after you talked to him for 5 minutes, you felt like you'd known him your entire life. And as my wife and I were looking for our where to go, we had decided we were going to, you know, at our age, finally find a place, you know, a true, proper single family home and have a forever home that we are going to move into and what to do and how to find one. And we thought building would be out of the question. And then we met Jimmy, JML Custom Homes and the work that he did. And Jim grew up in Milton. He went to Milton High School. Spent a lot of time in and around the city in Dorchester. I think he may have been there for a time. He was a guy that everybody knew. Everybody knew Jim. And when we met Jim, it came under the recommendation and the introduction of somebody else who already knew him and loved him. And I immediately knew that this guy was going to build the house that my family and I, we're going to move into and quite possibly spend the rest of our lives in. And the reason why I'm talking to you here today is because this man that I met and befriended and, you know, got into what was at first a business relationship with, decided, you know what, Hardy, he said, I'm just going to build you out a studio in your house so you can, you know, work there and spend time with your family, which is the type of guy that Jim was, because his wife, Shannon, and his daughters all live two houses away from me. And Jim worked out of his house, and he knew the importance of being close to home and being able to spend time with your family. And that's what he, I think, would wish for everybody. That's how he lived. That's how he wanted me to live. And I'm always amazed at guys like Jim, who at just I think he was a year older than me, accomplish so much and actually build things. Don't just sit on the radio and talk about things or, you know, go out into the world and, you know, sell things that people don't need or work on projects that no one cares. Jim was a builder. You know, he was the type of guy that looked at a piece of land and said, you know what, I can build somebody a home there, or I can build a bunch of homes there. I can do it in a way that is going to change people's lives. You know, it's a quote that I'm going to mess up from Emerson, but basically it has to do with how you judge success in your life and whether or not you make anyone's lives better. And Jim Lamar was the type of person that he went through life making so many other people's lives better by virtue of his deeds, by virtue of his actions. And he was the rarest of breeds. He was the type of guy who did what he said he was going to do when he said he was going to do it. And my heart is absolutely broken for his wife, for his daughters, and selfishly for me, because I lost a dear friend, somebody who, as I said, I didn't even know a year and a half ago, and turned into a guy that I saw every day and spoke to every few days at a bare minimum. He was a neighbor. He was a friend. He passed away very unexpectedly at his home, where he did a lot of his work. And because of Jim, where I sit now and able to do a lot of my work close to my family. And while I'm proud to say that I knew him, I'm proud to call him a friend, I know that I'm going to remember him, as will everybody who had a chance to cross paths with Jim Lamar, because he was the type of guy that made an immediate impression on you whenever you met him, whenever you talked to him. And in my case, because of the way he changed the life for me and my family for the better forever. So rest in peace, Jimmy. I love you. Always be part of our family, as will your family. And we're always going to be neighbors, and we're going to miss you every day. Thank you for allowing me to do that as we continue now and do an impossible segue into something much less important as we talk about the stories of the day. I guess it might be appropriate to do something, you know, like cheerful and hopeful here. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening. You know, there are things happening in golf here over the next week or so that I think are going to mean something to somebody, as the U.S. Open is going to hold local qualifiers in Massachusetts and Rhode Island over the next week or so. One of them is going to be happening. We'll just do them in chronological order. And believe you me, this has nothing to do with me. The idea of ever qualifying for a U.S. Open. But this means something to people, okay? So we'll start in chronological order. At Ledgemont Country Club, U.S. Open qualifiers happening on May 6th. They've got four qualifying spots at Ledgemont. Now, this is in Seekonk, so this is going to be managed by the Rhode Island Golf Association. And I think the membership there at Ledgemont Country Club, 29 of the 63 competitors list Massachusetts as their residency. Let's see. And I guess one of the qualifiers down there is Rich Berberian, Jr. from Vesper Country Club, who also qualified for the PGA Championship earlier this week. So good luck to Rich and four qualifying spots down there. The other qualifier, or the other two qualifiers taking place for the U.S. Open this week, Berkshire Hills Country Club, that's on May 7th. They've got two qualifying spots there. Patrick, and I believe his last name is pronounced Frodig, of Westwood. He's the reigning Massachusetts amateur champion. So the Mass-Am champ, Patrick, from Westwood, who turned professional before the start of this season, he's going to be in that field. 36 competitors at Berkshire Hills. 19 of them are from Massachusetts. And finally, this is the biggest one, Pine Hills. The U.S. Open local qualifier at Pine Hills is on May 9th. They've got five qualifying spots there and a bunch of people from Massachusetts. Three-time Mass Open champion Jason Thresher is going to be there. So a lot of great competition there. If you know somebody going for one of those qualifying spots for the U.S. Open, wish them good luck because it's coming up this week. And it's just the most democratic of enterprises, the U.S. Open. You know, anybody with a handicap low enough is able to, you know, to get into one of these qualifiers. And from there, you know, you can be an amateur. You can literally be a guy off the street and say, yep, I'm going to go play for this country's greatest golf championship. I know the Masters has more juice. I know people know that. Well, look, we've had this conversation before. The Masters is the Masters. It's at the same golf course every year. We all know about the green jacket. We all know about the 12th hole. I mean, everything about the Masters is the Masters. But when you're talking about, you know, what is truly American, you could make the case that it's still the Masters, but that's an invitational. You have to be invited to play in the Masters. If you're good enough to play in the U.S. Open, you can qualify for the U.S. Open. You don't need an invitation. You can just go through the qualifying and show up like, you know, Francis Ouimet did in 1913 and beat Harry Vardon over there at the country club. Kid comes out of nowhere to win the U.S. Open. I mean, that's why people have this romanticized idea of what the U.S. Open is all about. And it doesn't need romanticizing. It's legit. So good luck to all those guys who are going to be competing for the U.S. Open. And then those qualifiers coming up. All right. Speaking of coming up, Steve Conley, my friend from Callaway, stopping by to tell us what's new in terms of the Callaway lineup for this year, in terms of drivers and irons and golf balls, all that stuff. Steve Conley joining us next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Here we are once again on the Sports Hub Golf Club with, you know, the guy that I can't get him to not come in, Steve Conley from Callaway. Every year he's here for, you know, a couple of different times throughout the course of the season because you've always got new stuff. Steve, we kid because we love. I love to see you, buddy.
It's always great to see you, Hardy.
And you've always got good stuff. So, first of all, welcome back. First time on the show this year.
Absolutely.
I saw you at the Golf Expo where you had some new stuff, so I have an idea of what we're going to talk about today. But you tell me, what gets you excited when you wake up in the morning, you regional Callaway sales guy, it's got to be the new driver once again.
It is, yeah. And that's, you know, the driver is kind of the, you know, the driver is really what, you know, drives the industry. You know, it's certainly the sexiest product.
Yeah,
it's what people, you know, talk about the most. It's the club that people tend to change the most. So yeah, we're really excited. The new Epic Flash is, you know, it's another game changer for us. You know, in the industry.
Let me ask you, just out of curiosity, you guys must have numbers in terms of how often people change their driver as opposed to irons. Putter might be in line with the driver in terms of how often they change wedges. What's the breakdown in terms of how often people tend to roll that club over in their bag?
Yeah, for the avid golfer, it's probably every 2 years.
On a driver.
Actually, the two clubs that are hardest to get out of bag, especially for better players, tend to be fairway woods and wedges. Those are the two that they like to hold on to for a long period of time.
Wedges, that surprises me. I would think, now, from what I understand from talking to good players, because I'm not one of them, they like to swap out their wedges because the grooves have a tendency to wear down. Is that not a thing anymore?
No, it still is. I mean, if you talk to tour players, they'll switch out their wedges two or three times a year for that reason, just to make sure they have, you know, the perfect grooves. But, mm-hmm. you know, for that, even like, once again, for that avid player, when someone finds a sand wedge or a lob wedge that works for them, they tend to leave it in the bag a little bit longer.
It's funny you say the fairway woods, because I'm the same way. I've got an old Callaway that I've had in there. I don't even know what generation it is. You know what hybrids I have. You guys haven't made those for 4 or 5 yep. years, but I love them. The driver, though, and the irons that I have that are new, those to me make the biggest difference, because technology-wise, especially with the jailbreak and the new face technology with the jailbreak, it makes such a tangible difference just in distance and accuracy off the tee. You're kind of dumb to not be upgrading every few years at the least, because you're leaving yards in the bag.
No question. Really, in every category, that's the case. You know, even with fairy woods. It's the fairy woods now from, you know, Epic Flash fairy wood compared to even the original Epic 2 years ago. It's a dramatic difference in ball speed. And, you know, we saw that right away, really, on the driver side first with Epic Flash. When we were testing it with tour players this past fall. You know, a few of them still had the Epic in from 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. The rest were playing Rogue. And we were seeing, you know, if you can get a tour player and show them 2 miles per hour of ball speed, they think it's game changing.
Yeah.
You know, and it turned out that, you know, we saw between 2 and 7 miles per hour ball speed jump.
And what does that equate at that type of speed? What does that mean yardage wise?
It's probably, you know, between 6 and 16 yards.
Wow.
You know, so, and that's, you're taking a tour player that has their gamer that's dialed in perfectly for them, and to be able to see that kind of distance and much tighter dispersion as well. So that's when we knew we had something special on our hands.
So to me, it kind of started with the XR, which I thought was a great club. You went to the Epic after that. Then you went to the Rogue. You're still with the Epic driver now with the jailbreak technology on the face. It's got those pillars behind the face, Or I should say the jailbreak technology, yes, behind mm-hmm. it. The pillars behind the face that keep the structural integrity of the club intact top to bottom. So you're not losing energy and it's not getting dispersed by, you know, these infinitesimal but tangible changes in the club when you strike the ball. What is different this year? What have you done? Is it still Rogue? Is it still Epic? What is it?
Yeah, Epic Flash.
Epic Flash.
And the way you described jailbreak was correct. You know, really the titanium bars, they really lock in the sole and the crown so that we don't lose any of that energy through the bottom and top of the club, and all that energy is going to the face. And what it really did was the first time that we were able to decouple really the CT and, you know, from and increase ball speed at the same CT. You know, so CT, characteristic of time, is now the way the USGA measures you know, the faces and making sure that they're conforming. And we were able to get, at that same CT max level, able to get a lot more ball speed.
Can you write that equation out for me? I'll take a picture of it.
No, that's somebody smarter than me, definitely.
Okay.
But you know, that's, you know, so really, you and I talked quite a bit about Epic. And that was really, you know, once every 7 to 10 years, there's one of these drivers in the industry that has a huge technological jump. And that's what really Epic was because of jailbreak. But now, actually, just 2 years later, we've done it again with Epic Flash.
And the Flash really refers to the face.
Correct, the Flash face. And it's the first time, actually, the face was designed by AI, artificial intelligence.
So, but you still have to program the computers to use the AI. So what did they tell it? They told it everything that was happening, and the computer spit back some info and say, well, if this is happening, then you need to do this?
Correct. So on a normal driver, you know, obviously it's being designed for, you know, forgiveness and then obviously maximum ball speed. The design, what was the supercomputer was given the instructions of, here is the USGA limit in CT, you know, run tests and find until you have a face that's hotter than, that's the hottest we can make it over the entire face. And so a normal driver, when we design it, R&D will go through 4 or 5 iterations of a face, you know, to really kind of maximize that speed. And with this one, it was 15,000.
Wow.
So it's, if you see that, you know, nice new Apple computer you have right there, if you ran it on, you know, a high-end brand new computer, it would take you 34 years to be able to do that many iterations.
It's unbelievable. Now, when you talk about changing the face, is it materials? Is it thickness? What is it that's different about this year's face as opposed to last year's?
Yeah, so the Flash face, what it really is it is a change in thickness, but it's the overall design of the face. So if you look at, you know, cut open most drivers, they have a very similar look to them, at least the modern drivers, where you have tends to be a little thicker in the center, a little thinner on the edges to try to maximize speed on those miss hits. This Flash face, the way it was designed by the supercomputer, you'll see it's thick in one spot, thin in another. It's actually not very intuitive. So it's something that even our R&D people wouldn't have come up with. So that's they found that by making it a little thicker in this spot, it makes this, you know, low heel all of a sudden a lot hotter. So that's really
stuff
what it
you
comes
would never
that.
Think of. That doesn't necessarily follow logic, but the results don't
correct.
Work.
And that's why it looks very different and performs very different than any other driver face that we've seen.
Longer, straighter,
more ball speed, and significantly straighter downrange.
More forgiving.
Correct.
Okay. Here's something that I don't feel silly asking about because you and I have talked about it before. The sound of the ball coming off the club. I love the way my Epic sounds, the one that I have from 2 years ago. Has the sound changed significantly?
I would say it's maybe slightly louder than the original Epic, but in terms of it sounds really good. In fact, you know, I've said to you before, you know, we have the largest R&D group in the golf industry, and we have people that are focused on one thing, and it's PhDs focused on sound to make sure that we have that perfect sound, whether it's a driver or a set of irons or fairway wood, you know, to appeal to the most golfers.
I know it makes sense, but it's all part of that, like, confidence of hitting the ball and what you like. And that's, you know, that's, you get essentially a couple different types of feedback. You know, you see the ball flight, you feel in your hands, or hopefully don't feel a whole lot, what the ball feels like coming off the club, and you hear it. That's really all we have to work on. So as a consumer, that makes a difference to people.
Absolutely.
Who's carrying the club right now out on tour?
Obviously Phil has, you know, been our staple for a long time, but we have a huge, actually a really huge group now, you know, across all the tours. In fact, the Epic Flash is the number one played driver across all the worldwide tours.
And there's a lot of people playing it who aren't getting paid or don't even get it for free.
Correct. And that buzz really came from that fall where I think they heard some of our best staffers, you know, Ollie Snyder, Jans, Xander Schauffele, you know, and they were talking about how much ball speed they were picking up with the new Epic Flash. And all of a sudden you start getting the phone calls from people that aren't on your staff that want to come out and get fit and tested.
Very cool.
That's a great sign.
That's very cool. Steve Connolly from Callaway. All right, we got to talk about a couple other things. You mentioned, you know, fairway metals and irons. I don't know if there's anything new this year. Like I said, we talked at the expo months ago, but refresh my memory quickly.
Yeah,
what else is out there?
So
right now?
Rogue and Rogue X are still, you know, a huge part of our iron business, you know, in its second year. It's actually, I believe, based on Golf Data Tech, the number one selling iron in golf right now, based in March. But, you know, we have two new offerings this year, and we've updated. We now have a new 2019 Apex iron, so forged with face cup. So really a forged club that really was a game changer. You know, I've said that like three times already, but but you know, when we launched...
That's a player's iron, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it really isn't, though. We see people playing it up to 18 handicap.
No kidding.
You know, because we launched it, it was a forged... The last generation, the 2016 Apex, we launched it, and because of the face cup technology and the tungsten weighting, we were able to have a forged club that was both forgiving and fast. And in fact, Golf Digest created a new category in their Golf Digest hot list because of that iron, where now it's a player's distance iron.
Player's distance iron. So it's almost like a cross between a game improvement and a player's iron.
Correct. So that's really for, once again, we've seen that, you know, appeal to a huge, you know, much wider array of audience than we really planned initially, and we're seeing it even more so with this new Apex. And then on the other
end of the spectrum, you guys are just tweaking the lofts on those. You're making the pitching wedge at 40 degrees and people think it's longer.
No, it's a little higher than that, but but you know, the key is really, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of people over the years, you know, have kind of jacked up lofts. The key is to make sure that you're launching it at the same, you know, for that same trajectory that you want. So someone's hitting a 7 iron, they want to hit it the 7 iron the same height they always hit a 7 iron.
And that's what it is. You want it to land the same way because, you know, and believe me, I would love to be able to, you know, hit longer shots higher so that they have, you know, a better landing trajectory, but you don't always get that.
Correct. Yeah. So, and then on the other end of the spectrum, we have our new Big Bertha iron as well, which is if you want the easiest iron to get in the air, the most forgiving iron ever made, it's the new Big Bertha.
I hit one a few years, I think it was 2 years ago. I said, there's no way I'm going to play this thing. Now, I didn't make the switch over, but it wouldn't take a lot of convincing. You talk about an iron that is easy to hit. And if you can set your ego aside, and if you're the type of player that could really be helped by a Big Bertha iron, if you hit one, you're going to be convinced.
No question. And that's, you know, one thing we've added this year is it's a little thinner top line, and we've added the urethane microspheres that we introduced in the Rogue. So it actually has that really good sound and feel as well. And it's a little cleaner looking than the last version. So
speaking of feel, we got to talk about before you go, the Callaway golf balls, which I converted to, and they are fantastic. You have a couple of different versions now at the high end of the Callaway golf ball now.
Correct. So obviously we've had great success with the Chrome Soft and Chrome Soft X. That's really what all, you know, the Chrome Soft X is what most of our tour players are playing. You know, and it's, we've continued to grow dramatically in that category. And one of the things we've done is we actually make every Chrome Soft X, and the new ball that I'll mention in a second, every single ball is made in Chicopee, Massachusetts. So we've invested another $35 million into that plant. You know, at one time, I think we were less than 100 employees there. We're now over 400. So continuing to grow that business, and it's something we really believe in. So
love it. Love it. Keep the money at home. I love that. And what's the new ball?
So this is the ERC, which is named after our founder, Lee Reeves Callaway. So you know it must be something special if we're putting his name on it. And really, the goal, you know, that was given to the golf ball R&D group was, how do we make a distance ball feel like a tour ball? So give people that are looking for increased ball speed more distance from, you know, from their entire bag, and but give you feel around the greens. And that's really what the ERC is. So it's a hybrid cover, but it's designed, it's going to be higher launch, a little lower spin. So most golfers will find they'll hit this farther than any distance ball they've tried, but around the greens, it gives you that soft feel and spin.
Do the alignment aids, the one I'm looking at right now, have the alignment aids already printed on them? Do they come like this?
Correct. So that's, we introduced the triple track technology with this ERC golf ball. Now, you may have seen, Phil actually has it on his Chrome Soft X, which has gotten a lot of buzz, but the triple track, we feel like it's, you know, a half golfers generally will put a line on their golf ball, or at least use the side stamp to line up putts. So this is actually called the vernier effect. So if you look, it's obviously two blue and surrounded by a thicker red in the middle.
Yeah.
That's, and it's really designed to focus your eyes. It's actually exactly what you'd see if you're landing on an aircraft carrier with a plane. So it's either two blue and red in the middle, or two green and a red in the middle, and it allows you to focus your eyes. So if you're landing on an aircraft carrier at night, that's what it looks like.
I think it might look a little bit different, and plus, I don't hear any Kenny Loggins playing in the background. So we need a couple more elements to really bring this home. I love the look at this, though, and I've never used like the alignment aid for putting, but the fact that you got the three lines here, it does. It's more visually appealing than just that one black line you would draw yourself with a Sharpie and try and get it straight. You know these are straight because they're coming out of the factory like this. And the three lines do make a difference. Always something with you guys.
And if someone doesn't want to use the triple track alignment, you know, you can roll it over.
Roll it over.
And, you know, have that. So what you do see with a lot of the tour players is they use their alignment for short putts, 15 feet and in, but they will turn it over when they're trying to hit a 40, 50 footer because they're just focused on
it's pace. It's more about speed. And they're not even that as concerned with the line. Okay. Steve, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for coming in. I'm sure we'll
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I will see you again, midway through the summer when you guys come up with a bunch of more new toys. But always happy to see you.
R&D is always working, so we'll have something. Thanks, Hardy.
They never close, do they?
Definitely not.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Back now at the Sports Hub Golf Club. Hardy here with you on this Saturday morning. And thanks to Steve Conley there from Callaway, telling us about all the new goodies and all the offerings up here from Callaway this season. All right, so I mentioned that a lot of people base their golf interest and viewing habits on Tiger Woods and what he's doing. So let me tell you what Tiger has planned. Tiger sitting out, and we mentioned this last week when I was kind of going over the PGA Tour calendar and about Quail Hollow. And how people, you know, this is the tournament that I always thought of as like, oh, is Tiger going to play this one? He's got a relationship with Quail Hollow and the Wells Fargo Championship, and it's something that, you know, you could kind of count on him playing in if he was playing that season, and if he were healthy, and that was kind of like a benchmark as to what it was going to be like. So it came as a bit of a surprise when it turned out he wasn't going to be playing. Until you factor in the Masters, and I'll get to this. Bob Herrig wrote about this on ESPN, and he said, the fact that Tiger decided not to play says a lot about how big his Masters victory was and how golfers changed their schedules based on not just the majors, but their success rate in the majors and their legitimate chances at success in them. You know, it's not just about getting ready for the majors. Anybody can say to themselves, well, I'm going to do this and this so I can be ready for the U.S. Open. It changes, though, when you say, no, I've got a legit chance to win, so I have to be extra careful. And Tiger has to be thinking that way now based on the fact that he broke through and won his 15th major championship, and now he has to take this into consideration. It's no longer a pipe dream. And maybe it never was for him, but for a lot of us watching, thinking, oh, Tiger going to win in another major, ha, ha. Now that it's happened, he's got to take all this stuff into consideration. Herrig wrote an interesting column about this, and he brings up the fact that Ben Hogan, who was in a near-fatal car accident, he came back to win the U.S. Open the following year, and that he went on to win five more majors after that, but played a very limited schedule, and it put all of his focus on the major championships. So people are going to speculate as to how Tiger is feeling and what he's going to be doing and what his schedule is going to do. Last Thursday, he sat down for an interview with Golf TV, and people freaked out because they saw him walking across the room like very gingerly. It reminds me of how I saw Rob Gronkowski walking in his slides across the parking lot at Gillette Stadium one early Sunday morning when the team was traveling and Gronk hadn't traveled with the team, and I saw him going from his car into the facility. Yeah, part of it was the, you know, the wet pavement. Part of it was the fact that he's wearing his slides, but part of it was also he was feeling, you know, he was feeling that back, and people started speculating, wow, is Tiger hurt? His agent said immediately, Mark Steinberg said, no, nothing to see here. The Tiger is sore a lot. We all get sore. There's a big difference between being sore and being hurt. He's sore. He's not injured. Okay. He wanted everyone to know that that's not the case. But the fact that Tiger decided to skip this week and might be skipping more tournaments probably wouldn't sit well had he not won the Masters. But the fact that he did, and he has officially, as Herrig wrote, now reestablished himself among the favorites, major after major. You know, he was in contention at the PGA Championship, the last major before the Masters. The major before that, the British Open. He had sole possession of the lead on the back nine at the British Open last year. So the last three majors, he has been a contender. So now, as he figures out his schedule for the rest of the year, he's bought himself some wiggle room, because it's no longer just a notion that he wants to get back and win a major. No, he has, and he's contended. He's back in the top 10 rankings in the world for a guy who was down in the 600s not that long ago. And whether or not he's looking at like what Ben Hogan did, and we all know that Tiger loves his history, and how that factors in, and how Hogan used to, you know, after his accident, only focused on the majors. Who knows? You know, there's probably more to Tiger wanting to keep himself healthy for Bethpage Black coming up, where the PGA Championship will be contested, and keeping himself healthy and in shape for the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, where he had the most dominant victory in modern golf history, maybe ever, back at the U.S. Open there in the year 2000, then any other consideration, whether that be sponsors, whether that be endorsements, and he's got a lot that he has to do anyway. You know, he's going to be playing 5 out of 6 weeks in July and August if he plays in the FedEx St. Jude Invitational the week after the Open. And then he's got the 3 consecutive playoff events in August because, as we all know, the FedEx Cup playoffs have been shortened to a 3-event system, and they've all been moved up. You know, it's all going to wrap up by Labor Day this year. He's already announced a trip to Japan in October for the first ever tour event in Japan. There's going to be an exhibition match that he's committed to. Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas, President's Cup Australia. He's already got a lot on his plate. My point is this. Don't be surprised if he decides to scale back on things like we saw this past tournament. Quail Hollow, the Wells Fargo Championship, other tournaments where maybe you would have expected to see him. Now that he is once again a major championship winner, he's going to be focused in on those more than ever, if that is even possible. Tiger's got one more trip got planned for Monday. He's going to the White House. He is receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I'll tell you who else has won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I'll tell you why Rick Riley thinks it's hypocritical of Tiger to be accepting that award from his friend Donald Trump, the president, when we return and wrap things up here this morning on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Back to wrap things up here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. Very quickly, Tim McCone, are you there?
Hello? I am.
Look, I don't know what I've done to deserve such disregard and disrespect from you. But when you say things like, this hour of the golf show is brought to you by such and such, more than anything, Tim, it just hurts my feelings.
Look, I'm going to be honest. It didn't feel right when I said it. But we also have the hockey show coming up in like 10 minutes. So it's, you know, I'm just getting.
Next hour, he's going to chime in with this hour of the sports show.
Yeah. You know, right. Just well, first of all, as Ryan Johnston sits there, and by the way, are you doing an extended hockey show today, Ryan?
We'll mix in a little Celtics to start.
Okay.
But
okay. Good, good, good. Yeah. Okay. So wrong again, McCone. Hockey show doesn't start until 9 a.m. That's number one.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Okay. So now you've insulted Ryan Johnston. In addition to it, what's the name of the program that we're on right now together?
The Sports Hub Golf Club.
Okay.
Hosted by Hardy.
I'm not Felger. I don't call you Tim McCown, you know.
McBone.
McBone. Whatever, you know. Not a lot of I feel like the mother in Parenthood. Not a lot of respect, just a little, you know.
How about
That's
this,
all
though?
I want.
We have to bring this up again. You hosted with me the first time I was ever on 98.5, the Sports Hub, in that contest. And then 3 weeks later, you walked in the studio and you had no idea who I was.
You changed your hair. And I told you that night when we hosted at your audition, I was all hopped up on goofballs.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was out of my mind on the silly pills. So I can't be held accountable for
that.
All right.
In fairness, I hosted when Sean Silver won, and I'm still don't recognize him when he walks in the room. So.
And he's 6'5". Like, McCone is kind of like, you know, just this good-looking everyman. Silver, you know, he should make an impression on you just by his height, if nothing else. Oh, boy. All right. Here's something to think about as Tiger Woods heads over to the White House on Monday. He's going to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, does anybody else know about the Presidential Medal of Freedom? Can anyone there name someone who has won the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Didn't Bill Russell win it?
Well, of the sports figures who have won it, it's a pretty impressive list. And a lot of different people in a lot of different I guess, areas or pursuits have won. I mean, for everything from space exploration to philosophy, you know, Bear Bryant, Jackie Robinson, Ted Williams. But you've also got, you know, so like some of the, I would say, obvious ones, right? Arthur Ashe. But you've also got, you know, Richard Petty and a Yogi Berra, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan. You know, these guys have all been awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And
in terms of like entertainment figures, let's just say that the list gets even less illustrious. It's still a big, big deal. I get it. But when you say you're going to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom, it's like, who has won that? Oh, well, what if I told you that Andy Griffith? Does that change your mind about how important it is? I mean, they don't give this out to anybody.
Griffith is an American treasure, Hardy.
In my opinion, that and NYPD Blue are the two greatest television shows of all time. The Andy Griffith Show and NYPD Blue. Okay, so don't get me wrong.
It's quite an interesting duality you've got going there.
I appreciate that. But like Ellen DeGeneres and Lorne Michaels have won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Okay. So it's not like they're going to shut down the country and name a day after you if you win the Presidential Medal of Freedom. A lot of people have won it. Okay. James Taylor is a Presidential Medal of Freedom winner. Okay, let's keep things in perspective here. Loretta Lynn, Yo-Yo Ma. All right? I'm looking at the list right now. The reason why it's a bit hypocritical and silly of Tiger to be doing it, and I know he's friends or at least has a relationship with the president, but Rick Riley brought this up last week, and I thought it was a very good point. Tiger has done so much as a youth, when he started playing on public courses and with the First Tee program and to make golf accessible to everyone. The president himself has said golf should be aspirational. Golf should be something that you have to work your entire life toward so that you can join a club and play the true sport of kings. Forget about the Kentucky Derby and the horse racing. No, this is something that you have to work for your entire life, and it shouldn't just be given over to anyone, which is in direct opposition to how a lot of people feel, how I feel, and how Tiger Woods feels. Yet, there he is on Monday getting his Presidential Medal of Freedom. I don't know. For all the things that Tiger does with the Tiger Woods Foundation and with the First Tee program and to make golf accessible to kids who don't have any money and live in the inner city, and they want to give them access to golf courses and clubs and this great game that can teach you so much about yourself and life. To accept that medal from somebody who thinks that, no, golf is for rich people only, seems a bit hypocritical. Anyway, I don't know if you're going to cover any of that on the Ryan Johnston program, which begins next, Ryan.
Wasn't necessarily going to be talking about that.
All right. Plenty of other things to talk about. Celtics, I assume, first and foremost, and then the Bruins.
Yeah, and the hockey show coming up at 9 o'clock.
Very good.
You know, all right. Tim McCone will hopefully be able to name that when it comes time.
I love Tim McCone, and I love you too, Ryan, and I love Tucker Silva for producing here this morning. Thanks, and we'll do it again next week right here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. That's the name of the show, Tim.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.